Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 346 for comics originally released on March 26, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is The Flash, number 29. Okay, Drew, before we get into the actual contents of this, I want to speak for a moment on the cover. I mean, normally we just kind of blast through, get straight into the meat and potatoes of the book, but this cover has the caption, I guess is the right word, a race with death to save his mother's life. And we see the Flash racing towards, presumably his mother, with, you know, this skeletal kind of a thing with an axe, he's gonna go kill her or whatever. Now, I read a lot of comics. Arguably too much. I know a lot of people have put forth that argument. I disagree, but anyways, I will admit sometimes I lose track of exactly where each and every story is when I get to the next issue. So when I see a cover like this, a couple of thoughts come to mind. Golly, the Flash is going to be in a race with death to save his mother's life. Okay, maybe I'm a little literalist at times. The other thought that came to mind is, isn't this kind of how the whole New 52 thing got started to begin with? This set certain expectations in my mind for this issue. Did it do the same for you, or not at all?
No, not really. I mean, I just finished 28 because I was catching up.
Ah.
So I just finished 28 and then followed that up with 29. And it worked pretty well for me. So, no, I didn't really have those expectations.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. I think that's one of the cases where reading issues back-to-back, either as single issues or as part of a trade, versus as they come out, you know, a month or so apart, it influences the reading experience. Sometimes better one way versus the other, but it's different. There were a couple of things about this that, I mean, overall, it's a good issue. It's not a great issue, but it's a good issue, I think. Solid art, decent writing. I mean, opening on a page that has, what, 7 or 8 captions, a couple of word balloons. I mean, it's a little bit wordy in places. There were also a couple of places where stuff they set up previous issue with Deadman and the Flash and whatnot, which I think is an interesting pairing, you know, gets some payoff here. And it's one of those things where writers, I think, are in a bit of a catch-22 at times. Either they play fair, and they set something up, and it pays off, and it's at the risk of telegraphing aspects of the story, or being considered like a writing trope, or something like that. Or they don't play fair, and the plot twist just comes out of the blue, and it seems like a deus ex machina, or something like that. And it's, I think, increasingly difficult for a writer to gracefully put into the story what they need to play fair, yet not so blatantly so that it's telegraphed or whatever. And I think some of what they did with The Flash and Deadman didn't really come off as telegraphed, but it's like, okay, that's interesting. And it's, whenever I see something like that, it reminds me of, like, classic Star Trek, where something would happen and Spock would come out with some, you know, well, there's this little-known Vulcan physiology fact that protected him from whatever would have killed anybody else on the crew. You know, there was a little bit of that in this story with what was going on with The Flash and Deadman in places, the whole, you know, what are the odds of the last genetic match for a killer ghost spirit being one of the regular cast members of this title? Of
course, yeah.
Flip side is, if that wasn't the case, this story would have been in some other title where it was one of the regular cast members of that book. I don't see those as like failings or anything of this, because I think that's just part and parcel of storytelling these days. You know, they need to do some of that to tell a story where things aren't just randomly happening. Yet it can come across as both easily mockable and I don't say a writing crutch, but as the story having been written versus them just retelling the events, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. There was a little convenience there at the end, and I see exactly what you're saying. And you know, it goes. Sometimes it goes with the suspension of disbelief, but you can only go so far, I guess. You know, you still want to be rooted with a little bit of believability and plausibility in there. That was convenient the way it was tied up, and But having read them back to back, I did get a sense of a nice, solid story back to back to back, really, with the first part, 27. And I like seeing Dead Man. I hadn't seen him in a book for a while, and I'd forgotten a little bit about that character. So it was nice to see him in action again. And it's a cool character. You know, he's a cool character, so I like him. And I try to read Flash. I'm not good at keeping current with him all the time, but I try to at least either let him stack up or, you know, take a break and then go back, because Flash is, you know, ever since the show back in, was that like 90, early 90s or late 80s?
Early 90s, somewhere in there, yeah.
Kind of had an affinity for the character, and, you know, I believe... Didn't the Flash title kind of harken the era of the Silver Age in comics anyway? Wasn't that like the mark?
Barry Allen's appearance in Showcase was really what many people consider as having kicked off the Silver Age. An argument could be made for Martian Manhunter a little before that. And then when he died at Crisis and Wally West took over, arguably that was the launch of another age. And then, of course, what happened in Flashpoint, and I want to touch on that in a few minutes, again, another kind of clear milestone in DC's history.
Yeah, so he's an important character and one that I always like, mm-hmm. But I don't tend to read it consistently, but I do try to keep up with it.
Well, if you like the character, why don't you read it consistently?
The title is usually uneven, you know, and sometimes it's not that compelling. But I don't want to forget it entirely and write it off. Because, you know, I have an affinity for the character, so I check in on him every now and then and see what they're doing, what the creative team is doing and read it for a while and then kind of, you know, sometimes drop off again.
I can see that. I've got a soft spot for the character because it was one of the earliest titles I kind of really got on board with, as a regular reader. I think it was with the issue The Day It Rained the Flash. And just the way they play with science and stuff like that, they do some fun things.
Yeah.
And Barry is just a cool character. But, I mean, I get what you're saying with it being uneven at times. And I'll be honest, I've got concerns about where this series is going to go in the next few months, based on some of what happens in this issue. I mean, they deal a little with the mystery of who killed the Flash's mother, but frankly, very little, particularly given that it was the cover blurb.
And it looks like Francis Manapul has already transitioned over to detective.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Brian Bucciolato going to sever ties with Flash as well?
I am not sure. I'll be honest. I don't keep up on who's on which book for the most part.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that he's probably not going to continue to write this one and detective. But it's possible. I know Francis can't draw both, but... it should be interesting.
The concern I've got is it looks like they're going to dig into the mystery around the death of the Flash's mother. And that's really a dicey plot point to dig into. I mean, at the risk of getting into spoilers, and I don't think it is because it's foundational to the New 52, we know what happened from Flashpoint around his mother's death. And again, that to say it's foundational, I mean, literally the entire New 52 universe... Everything is the way it is now because of what happened when his mother died. I don't think you can get any more foundational than that. And if they go and look into that area, it's like, what can they reveal that doesn't go counter to what we've seen, what we've been told about, what happened in Flashpoint? And to some people, that doesn't matter. Hey, if they tell a good story, so be it. And on the one hand, I agree with that. On the other hand, there's this little part of my brain that will just go pop if they decide that his mother died through some other events than what launched the whole New 52 universe. It just seems like a really risky story point to dive into.
From that last page, it seems like that might be what's going to happen, though.
It seems inevitable based on some of this, yeah. And there was aspects of, again, how my expectations were set going into this issue based on the cover and stuff like that, which is not a fault of the story. It's a fault of whoever decided to put that cover on this issue. And it almost seems like that maybe should have been on the next. I don't know. I liked what was in here, but it wasn't what I was expecting going into this. And there were a few things that fell flat for me, I guess would be the way to put it. The whole, what are the odds with the genetic match, the oh yeah, I should have seen that coming. And there were a few places where it seemed like we got some recap, some exposition, and a few things. It wasn't a bad story, but I think it could have been told better. It could have been a better story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that. I enjoyed it. I liked the, there's some really good mystery in here with, you know, some missing files and, you know, paternity issues and DNA testing. And it really, you know, pulled me in and I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And I thought, well, okay, that's interesting. That's pretty cool. If that turns out to be the case, that'll be pretty neat. And it zigged a little bit when I thought it might zag. And that's good. I mean, that it's a step ahead of me. And, I had a lot of fun with it. And I really liked the character of Dead Man. I thought the art was fine. I enjoyed the character. There was, again, really convenient, power set. Thing that kind of, you know, wow, I didn't realize you could do that as well with that. And, that's great. And it was convenient, but it still worked for me. I had enjoyed it enough that I really enjoyed the story arc. And I thought it was a really good 1-2-3 punch, arc there. And I gave it a 4, low 4, but I gave it a 4 and, enough to keep me on the book. You know, I'll read 30 and definitely want to see what's going to happen with, especially that last panel, and see if we get any more illumination into exactly what they're talking about there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really debating, do I give this a high 3, a low 4? It's like right on that edge. And it wasn't bad. There was nothing that made me think, oh, come on, you've got to be kidding me. Other than diving into his mother's death. I think that's just risky, but it could work out. But there was also nothing that really definitively kicked it above kind of that average. So I think I'm going to go with that high 3. But I don't think, frankly, our ratings are that far apart.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
I do think either a little more time, a little more editorial guidance. It wouldn't have taken much to kind of shore up this enough, in my opinion, to have definitively got it into that 4 and maybe, you know, into a high 4. But it wasn't quite there. But definitely I'm going to be very curious what they do in this title over the next couple of months. And I'm uncertain if it's going to work for me or if it's just going to be, oh, come on, you've made a tactical blunder there in the story you've chosen to tell. Yeah, it would be like telling Batman's origin. And yeah, they got mugged, but they're okay. The parents, you know, not that big of a deal. Now, Bruce just overreacted, you know. Anyways, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, all new Ghost Rider.
Yeah, this is an actual number one. I thought it was interesting on the cover that the all new part of the logo is itty bitty. Given how many all new titles Marvel has, I don't know why this one's not as all new as some of the others.
Yeah, if it's an all new Marvel Now title and this is the all new Ghost Rider, do you cross out the all new and the all new? Do they divide them amongst themselves, and then you get the Marvel Now Ghost Rider? Is that how that works? You're dividing fractions.
I don't know. Too much math for a Ghost Rider title. Man, this one I've got some mixed feelings on.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'm a fan of Ghost Rider, but not like a huge fan of the character. I mean, where do you stand in terms of just the character in general prior to this issue?
He's never really been that high on my radar.
Okay. Have you seen the movies?
Yeah, I saw the Nick Cage.
Okay. I've got at least the first movie. I'll be honest, I haven't watched it.
Okay.
There's something about the whole face burning off thing that I haven't decided if I actually want to watch. But it was a comic book movie, so I kind of felt obligated to get it when I saw it at a cheap price. Anyways, this issue, it started out with a credits page, which actually had some nice design elements to it.
Very
and
cool.
Then we get a two-page title sequence. And I'm like, wow, I'm 3 pages into the book and I haven't gotten anything yet. Did not start the issue out on a good note for me. Then when things get moving, it was hard for me to read through this. First off, the art style, it's not bad. And it actually grew on me over the course of the issue. But starting out, not the kind of artist I would have picked if I were selecting one. It's just not an art style that I naturally gravitate to. Nothing wrong with it. It fits the property. And again, it grew on me over the course of the book. But by the time I'm 4 pages in and just now starting to see art, it felt like this thing had a little bit of a hurdle to overcome. And then as I'm going through it, I'm like, wow, okay, we're relaunching a title. Let's replace the white character with an ethnic one. So, okay, out with Johnny Blaze and Danny Ketch, in with Robbie Reyes. Okay, check, done that. I mean, if it worked for Blue Beetle, it can work here, right? You know, Blue Beetle, that series DC ended a year ago, so you could argue if that worked. And Reyes, I mean, same last name, it's like, ugh, unfortunate coincidence, but okay. And frankly, East LA, El Paso, yes, totally different places, but let's get the Hispanic in here. Okay, nothing right or wrong about it, but seems slightly cliche. We've seen this sort of move done before. And then we get to where we replace the signature look of the character with an updated one, you know, and the whole, let's ditch the motorcycle and replace it with a car. Okay. In the letters thing at the end, they're equating it with, well, he used to be a cowboy. Yeah. But I think one of the things that's most associated with Ghost Rider, other than the whole blazing skull head, is the motorcycle. I really question the decision, and it may work out fine, but I question the decision to change that. And what's interesting is, despite making those radical changes to the character, let's keep the signature jacket. Throw everything else out, but let's keep that. Okay, I'm now a little puzzled as to what direction they're going. The one thing I thought this issue did wonderfully was really set up this Robbie Reyes as being a really good older brother to his handicapped younger brother, who he takes care of all by himself. Okay, a little bit of a cliche, but I felt like I kind of got to know Robbie and relate to him, but identify with him in some respect. You know what I mean? This entire thing is building up to him becoming Ghost Rider. The name's not used. I mean, we get the thing at the end. This is all set up. But, I mean, it did establish him as a decent kind of a guy. Good older brother. Obviously a qualified stunt driver who could be in the next Fast and Furious movie. I mean, that was clear. And a ill-defined, somewhat ludicrous origin of like being gunned down and burnt up by mercenaries and inexplicably becoming the new Ghost Rider. I was reading that and I had to go back. It's like, what just happened here and why? I kept alternating between, you know, some of what I'm reading I'm really liking. Some of it, it's like, where did this come from? What's going on here? And what was your take on this? Am I being overly hard on this, or?
Let me start off with the good stuff.
Okay.
I think that the art is the star here. I think Trad Moore, who does the art, is really great. I really liked this art a lot. I thought it was incredibly detailed, and some of the backgrounds were, like, the shop itself. I was looking at the stuff on the pegboard, all the tools on the pegboard and things, and I just think it's really top-notch art going on here. So that helps tell the story very much so. Mm-hmm. I really like the relationship between older brother and younger brother. Emotionally felt for the kid when he was picked on and bullied. It did a really good job of setting that up. Moved along really quickly, and we didn't get to spend too much time with it. But I can see they want to get some action in here. And then it kind of once the car race started, it got a little lost a little bit for me. It wasn't really clear what was happening, why things were happening, especially there towards the end. And I'm assuming you're going to find out in the coming issues. They did not give you a lot. And so we don't really know why some of the things happened to this guy that happened. And I guess we'll get those answers later. But it was an odd origin issue, I thought. But first half, great. Art,
yeah,
great.
I would agree with everything you're saying there, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and then it kind of fell off the rails for me towards the end. I can't quite give up on it so quickly. I'll have to stick around for a few more issues just to see where they're going. So it's solid, and it's in that same, for me, it's still in that same high 3, low 4, and I'm going to give it a low 4 again.
Okay, what kicked it over to the 4? And
definitely
kept it?
The art. The Tradmore art is really, really strong. And, you know, like I said, I did enjoy the story in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm a little perplexed as to where this is at the end, I'm hoping there'll be some illumination issue 2. You know, they only had 20 pages or so. And so I'm going to give them a chance to write themselves out of this and keep me hooked, because I'm really concerned for the younger brother now, and I want to see what happens, how he is taken care of now, and I'm looking forward to finding that out.
I, again, totally agree with most of what you're saying there. One other page of art I think is worth calling out is when Robbie realizes basically the cops are after him
yeah.
in his car chase or whatever. And we get the couple of things in the background of just he's imagining going to jail, his brother being left alone. That was really well done, and that was all on the art.
That last panel, it looks like his brother is as aged in his mind. Is that what you got from it? That the brother has grown up all alone because of this? Because
yeah.
he's had to go to jail. That's kind of what I took from that as well.
He let his brother down.
Yeah.
You know. The next page where we get the city grid and we see the car path or whatever, at first it's like, okay, they're telling us he's doing a U-turn, doing some of that stuff, and then he's like zipping and zagging all over the place. I'm like, okay, come on. But while it's an art style that again, I don't tend to gravitate towards, this artist really pulled off a lot of those things. So again, I completely agree with that. And I think you're right. The car chase is kind of the dividing point. Up until then, it's mainly set up on the character, but it's good stuff. It's interesting stuff. A lot cliche in a few places,
yeah.
But that's not to say bad. It's just we've seen this sort of thing before. I mean, how many times do we see the solo person having to take care of the young kid who's handicapped? They've got all these challenges, etc. I mean, it's a staple of storytelling because it's actually, I don't know why. I'm not even going to say it's fodder for good story. I would have liked to have seen this either move past the origin to where he's now presumably Ghost Rider, or at least explain aspects of the origin, or give me something to sort of speculate on, or something to go on. It's just things happen and it didn't make sense to me. I am expecting the next few issues to clarify some of that, but for me, again, it was right there near that 3 and 4 edge. I got to give this one the 3. It was, in some respects, a definite swing and a miss. Not bad, not, oh my God, why did they publish this? It shows some promise. They made some interesting choices and decisions. I agree, the art definitely has some standout qualities to it. But I would have liked to have seen them just knock it out of the park. And this is the kind of issue that maybe if they'd had a double size issue and some more room, they could have done that.
Yeah. Or maybe they cut down on the car chase. It took a few pages too many for me. As I finished up the story and thought, oh, we're really missing a couple pages here to give me a little more information. So maybe you cut some of that. I mean, I get it. It was a car chase. I get it. I don't really need to have panel after panel of that. So I don't need to see the grid, the route he took to try to lose the guy. I really don't need to see all that. Just give me a little bit more backstory on what happened there at the end. And that would have improved it.
What about at the beginning? We spend a page just establishing he's a mechanic. Another page, his boss doesn't pay him his full wages. You know, he's trying to rip him off.
I kind of like that. I was always envious of people that could flip through a big stack of wad of money and tell you how much was there, or how much was missing. I always thought that was really a cool trick. And I kind of liked that. It kind of showed he was like street guy, you know?
It was okay. I just think they could have been a little more efficient in the space they used to tell that part, giving them a little more later to play with. I mean, it didn't seem woefully uncompressed, but that first page, you know, where he's just there under the car or whatever, that one was the most gratuitous, like, come on, can tighten this up a little. But again, part of that was just me getting a little antsy, I guess, after, you know, 3 pages of credit and title. Again, good stuff, interesting stuff, not great stuff, had some things I think are highly mockable, just kind of the checkoff list of, okay, replace it with an ethnic character, change the look, update it, revise it, whatever, make it cool. But this could be a take on the character that works, or a year from now is totally forgotten. The only thing I really question was changing from a motorcycle to a car. That just seems like not a drastic change, not a violation of the character, but that's the one that just seems the oddest to me.
Well, I mean, I wonder if because they added the little brother in the wheelchair, I mean, how would he give him a ride anywhere on the motorcycle?
Fair point, but that wasn't his car he was driving, was it?
Wasn't it?
I thought he had borrowed it from the car shop.
I thought he had the pink slip. I thought it was one he was building.
Was it? Maybe I misread, and either way, the practicality of needing the car for the brother, I will grant. Actually, second page, no rush on that. They're not picking it up till Friday.
Ah, good call.
Not his call. Not no his
wonder,
car.
No wonder he bet the pink slip.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to do when it's not yours.
And he was willing to let the wheelchair go, too, and that looked like a fancy one. Anyways, not a major problem. I'm just thinking that the motorcycle aspect is so associated with that character that I'm curious about that. And I'm also curious if we'll see any of the previous Ghost Riders in the future, particularly given that the Johnny Blaze version is over in Thunderbolts right now. So we may have multiple Ghost Riders running around.
That would be different.
It wouldn't be the first time. During the whole Midnight Suns era, we had two or three of them, I think, if you include Vengeance. So
they interact on the same title?
They were crossovers and stuff like that. Technically, I don't think Blaze was still fully considered Ghost Rider at the time, but during part of it he was, I forget. Wouldn't be the first time, probably won't be the last time. I would actually like to see the different ones interact in some way, shape, or form. It may be an excuse to play off why the car was the better choice or something. So it at least gives it a distinct visual, and that kind of helps. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah, Real Heroes.
This is the first issue from Image Comics. This is by Brian Hitch. He created it. He's doing the writing, the drawing, a lot of it. It's build is being from the Hitch Factory. And I really like Brian Hitch's art. This had the concept of kind of Galaxy Quest meets the Avengers. I'm like, that's a cool concept. I like that idea. But it's Brian Hitch doing the writing, the drawing. I mean, he's the main mover and shaker here. It seems like delays are a given on this title. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say enjoy this one. Read it a couple times because you probably won't see another one for, I don't know, 3 months?
I don't know. Hopefully it'll come out on time. Hopefully he stockpiled this, but it seems risky in terms of I would not bet the farm on when the issues get released.
Yeah, if the trade comes out on schedule, so they've done 5 issues every month, you know, five issues and it's come out on time and then the trade came out, I would be very surprised if there's not a delay in there somewhere.
Yeah. This issue had 3 main sections to it, I'm going to say. You had the first page with the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center. You've got the next 10 pages with the superhero slugfest. And then the last 7, which I'll term as kind of the recruitment scene. And the pacing on this felt off. I mean, we spend 10 pages in that middle sequence before the reveal of some stuff. And I'm debating if I want to give that away or not. I mean, I think it's part of the premise of the thing, so I suppose it's okay. So, spoiler warning, if you haven't read it and you care and you don't want it spoiled, read it first, come back, then listen. How about that? That work? One page of the World Trade Center, cut to a double page spread. We're in a superhero slugfest in New York, a la the Avengers movie. We spend 10 pages in there before it's revealed we're watching a movie. And is the reveal surprising? No, it's part of the premise of the series. It makes sense. But, frankly, given the premise of the series, it could have just as easily been a jump forward into the quote-unquote present, for all we knew. You know, that this was, you know, X years ago, and now we actually have heroes and stuff. They could have prevented the World Trade Center thing if they had existed, whatever. It felt like a bait and switch, like a toying with the audience, not playing fair. Then we get all the exposition to introduce us to the cast, a la like a Entertainment Tonight or an ETV kind of a thing. Very exposition heavy. And then we get a long, drawn out kind of recruitment thing at the end. And if this were a movie, I would have been fine with the pacing the way it was, because I get to see the entire movie in one sitting. I mean, I don't know how long it was into Galaxy Quest before it was revealed, hey, they've got a real live ship to fly here. But it almost doesn't matter if it's a half hour in or whatever out of a hour, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour movie or whatever it would be. With comics, I expect there to be a certain completeness, solidity, something to that first issue, even of a mini series, that I didn't totally feel we got here. And it took the entire issue to basically give us the premise. And again, good premise, fun stuff, but the fact it's Brian Hitch, I worry how long it's going to take for this to really play out in its entirety. And if they should have given us a little bit more kind of real stuff now than all this backstory. I mean, what were your thoughts on that?
I think I liked it a little better than you did. The 9/11 flashback at the beginning, it was a little off-putting, I guess. I'm not really sure why we had to lead off with that. But I did enjoy the movie aspect and seeing what their powers are, or their movie versions of their powers are, And yeah, I knew the premise, so I was waiting for the lights to come up in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And but I enjoyed spending a little time with each of the characters as a superhero and seeing their movie star personalities, and then spending a little time with them as actors and seeing their real life personalities and the differences between the two. And I thought that really worked. I really liked that back and forth. I really liked the time that we spent with the misogynist and some of the other characters, and I thought it was pretty cool. It really kind of got me hooked with this group. Then, unleash the bad guys, and the recruitment starts, the battle and the recruitment stuff starts. And that got a little hazy with exactly how that was working out. And then, but I still liked it, and I enjoyed the ride, and I think there's enough here for me to want to keep reading this. I know there is. It set the hook, and I enjoyed the flash forward to, this futuristic New York and what the mission is, or seems like it might be. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because these guys are not equipped for this. And so this should be fun. And let's see how it falls apart or doesn't fall apart, or see how they rise up to save the day. I think it'll be kind of cool. And so I liked it a little more than you did, I think.
I guess the question is, did you respect the writing? It seemed misleading, a non sequitur scene at first, an overly long drawn out for what was, in some cases, presumably a potentially obvious reveal, then followed by a ton of exposition to tell us about the characters versus showing us, although in a few cases they do actually do show us, that's fair, and then a bit of a drawn-out thing at the end to get stuff going. And what we see isn't bad, but I've got to think if Hitch had teamed up with somebody with more writing experience and some stuff like that, or had some editorial oversight or some better coaching, something, we could have gotten a tighter story, a more impressive first issue, that made me feel like I really knew these characters versus having just watched the E! Hollywood special on them.
Yeah, I can see that take. I still don't get the 9/11 stuff at the beginning. I don't know why that was there. I don't think you needed that to flash forward to future New York. I don't think you needed that. Some of the writing was a little cliched with some of the Hollywood types, and the Hollywood actors and actresses and what they're like. But I thought it was strong enough to, again, set the hook and make me want to come back and read another book. So, again, I'm at the high 3, low 4. And again, I'm jumping over the fence over to the low 4.
This is one that I was, I think, even more split on than the others. I'm giving it a hard time, no doubt, but it is Brian Hitch art, and that's, his art is great to look at. He did a fabulous job on that. I wish he would have gotten a little more help on the writing side. What he had was not bad, but frankly, a little cliche in a few places, could have been better. I was wanting a bit more out of this, but I am going to give it that low 4. It's got some good stuff. I think the premise was, while only set up and not paid off at all in this, was well set up, just not as gracefully as I would have preferred. I do want to see where this goes. I think there's a lot of potential. I think the 9/11 stuff was there to set up one of the characters as having a heroic mindset. He's going to be the one that probably rallies the team into actually doing the right thing because it's the right thing. So I think that is, based on gut feeling, going to be pivotal in the overall picture. In the sense, in this issue, it was a bit of a non sequitur.
Yeah, and probably could have started off the second issue, maybe.
I don't know.
It's been embedded in the second issue somewhere.
Or somehow made more integral to it. It's going from one page of that to cut an arbitrary time later to a superhero fight. That shift right there, I think, was the main problem. This is something I think will read better in a single sitting in a trade than in issue installments. And note the avoidance of the term monthly there.
Nice.
I mean, I hope Hitch is able to get this out on a regular basis. It'd be a shame if that doesn't happen. But
I hope he didn't do this instead of getting Forever Evil out on time.
That would be a shame. I would, if that were the case, and I would hope DC has some words with him.
Yeah,
There's no reason this couldn't have been out another couple of weeks later, whatever. This should not have superseded Forever Evil.
Yeah.
If that is indeed the case, and that's just speculation on your part.
Yeah, I know. So for me, we have The Flash, we have Ghost Rider, and we have Real Heroes. And they're all at the I3 low 4 for me. And, you know, you look to me for guidance. You all sit out there waiting for my decree from the mountaintop on what you should do with these three issues. I know you're at the edge of your seats, and I don't know. I'm kind of split on all of them. I can't wholeheartedly endorse that you throw down your $4 for each one of these. But they're worth a sample. I think they're all three worth a sample. And that's as good as it gets, I guess.
In fairness, The Flash was only $2.99. The others were $3.99.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, again, I think all of these were in a very similar spot. I don't think we would recommend against any of these. So I think that's something in all of their favor. But, yeah, it is hard to say, oh, you absolutely must go get these. I think if you're into the particular characters, all of them are worth picking up. But, yeah. This was, again, for me, they all fell right there in that same 3 to 4 category. And normally for me, it's clearer cut as to do I round up, do I round down kind of a thing in that split decision. It was really hard this week. Now, speaking of this week, I've been getting weekly shipments from DCBS for over a decade now. And this box I got was big. It was heavy. This is the most expensive single weekly shipment I have gotten from DCBS. The entire time I've been there, with only one or two coming close, and one or two of those were catch-up weeks after I'd been unemployed for a while, I had, I think, 64 comics, a couple of other items. I got the Chip Kidd Guide to Graphic Design, the Alex Toth Genius Isolated, and that book is huge and heavy, but, man, there was just a ton of stuff that came out this week.
Heading the list for me was The Private Eye, number 6. I don't know if you had a chance to read that.
I did.
From Panel Syndicate, and it was a little delayed. I'm not sure how long.
I am going to quibble with you on terminology there. It was a longer gap between issues than we have had in the past. I don't know that I would say it was technically delayed. They have been very upfront on setting expectations. I feel that the next issue comes out when the next issue comes out, if it comes out.
Yeah.
Not enough people pony up, it doesn't come out.
And I didn't really mind the delay. I was happy it came out, though, and not disappointed with the issue.
Another
really strong issue. We get a little kind of insight into the business side at the end in the back matter. Turns out sales were very brisk for issue 5, and so Brian and Marcus have kind of stated that if 6, this issue of sales are equivalent to that, that's enough to put them over the top, and they will be able to finish this 10-issue story. So financially, it's above break even, and so good. That's good. I was hoping it would be gangbusters, and you know they'd be rolling around in big stacks of bills, but I guess there's not enough folks paying for that. But he never really got into the numbers either. But it is encouraging that enough people are paying. There's enough money coming in that it's viable for them. And this is going to continue. We're going to get this the whole story. And in case you want to catch up, they have bundled those first 5 issues together as one large PDF, almost like a trade PDF or trade CBR title. And so you can grab that and 6 and just sample them if you want to, because 0 is an option. You don't have to pay a thing.
Yes, it is. And that's I will admit that's still what I've done.
And I still give them 99 cents an issue. That's what I'm kind of used to paying for digital stuff. So
I'm going
to
keep that in mind. So the next time you lord over me that I haven't paid for this, we're only off by, what, $6?
$6, yeah. Yeah. So really, it's not that big of a deal. It's like a latte, really.
Yeah. They've been knocking it out of the park on this stuff, though. And when you were saying, you know, I mean, again, were they delayed or not, whatever. I was happy it came out. I will admit I was disappointed it hadn't come out sooner. I am enjoying what they're doing there. And I am very pleased that they seem to have proven out this business model, because I like this a lot better than the Kickstarter approach or being at the mercy of any particular publisher. This really empowers the creative team. and it makes it much more of a meritocracy kind of a system. And I think that's benefited the material. So I'm glad they're having success with this.
Yeah, it was really solid. And, you know, that's available at panelsyndicate.com.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mention that. Or I'm sure if you just Googled The Private Eye, you would get there eventually. But a really strong book.
Yeah. Another one I read that I really enjoyed this week was the Hacktivist from Boom Studios' Archaea Black Label. This was the third issue. This is the stuff, this is created by Alyssa Milano, who's not doing the writing or any of the stuff, but is just kind of the creative, you know, guidance or whatever. This has had some really interesting ideas in terms of social media and some stuff like that. I've been really impressed by it. It was one that I picked up just out of curiosity since she was attached, but it's well done.
Yeah, I did issue, I read issue one, and I haven't picked up the others yet. It's a four-issue mini, is that correct?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
I do definitely want to read it, because I thought the first one was pretty good.
Yeah. Speaking of four-issue stories, one thing I did not read this week, and I did so intentionally, was World's Finest number 21. This has the fourth part of the First Contact storyline, in which Huntress and Power Girl meet up with Superman and Batman. And the entire reason I haven't read it yet is part three is in Batman Superman number 9 that hasn't come out yet.
The cover says part 3.
Of World's Finest?
Yeah.
No, the cover says part 4.
Weird. The cover says part 3, and then inside it says part 4. Strange.
Hang on, let me open this up. On the cover, mine clearly says part 4. On the inside, it says part 4.
Mm.
And it seems to be picking up from somewhere that doesn't seem to be where I left it.
What was the other one? Was Batman Superman?
Yeah, Batman Superman number 9.
From next week?
I don't know that it's, if it's from next week or not. I don't think so.
Very confusing.
I don't recall seeing it when we've gone through the list of what to pick for the next couple of weeks. So, I think DC is hitting some scheduling issues. Obviously they seem to have hit it with this. They've hit it with Sandman, Overture. They've hit it with, Superman Unchained, obviously Forever Evil.
Does that bode well for Batman Eternal and Future's End weeklies?
You know, there are two ways to look at that. One, no, it doesn't, because they can't keep their monthly books on time. And the other perspective is yes, most certainly, but it does not bode well for the people who are in charge of it, are responsible with making that happen, because their life may be hell for the next year. But I think they've got a lot more writing on getting those weekly titles out on a regular basis. Hopefully they've built up some lead time. But that's just a meat grinder of a situation. I mean, I talked to one or two people connected with the 52 and Countdown and Trinity and stuff and Brightest Day and whatnot. And you get cycled in and out, and there's a lot of people involved, a lot of cooks in the kitchen in terms of just the coordination aspect. So from an editorial perspective, those books are just challenging. But hopefully they can pull that out. I mean, it can't be as bad as one of the other issues I read this week, which was Brilliant number 5 from Marvel's Icon line. This was, I believe, it was unclear. The letters page indicated that this was going to wrap it up. They were going to go on a hiatus and come back with a new series, new volume or something. Which is confusing because it was part 5 of what I thought was going to be a 7-part story. But the previous issue shipped on August 22nd, 2012. This issue started out with absolutely no story momentum for me. I think it only had one or two issues that came out during 2012. I mean, the majority of the story took place before any of the new 52. This was one of those things where Diamond should have canceled the orders and forced a resolicitation. I was disappointed that did not happen. And I think if I'd read that issue back when I could still remember the rest of the story, it probably would have worked better for me. I can't imagine it wouldn't have.
Quite an eventful Superior Spider-Man number 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Enjoy it, folks. I don't really think there's anything I can say about it that would not spoil it a little bit. So just read that one. I'm anxious to hear what folks think. I can't say anything.
There was a lot of really interesting things going on. I have heard that sales for Amazing Spider-Man number 1. Marvel has announced it's like over 500,000 copies. Now, I don't know what the scope of those sales are worldwide, if it includes digital or what all. But I mean, that is, if that is what it turns out to be through the direct market, and it very well may or may not be, again, don't know the scope of it. The last time we have seen numbers like that was the Obama cover of Spider-Man, and it took over 2 months to do that, or 2 months to do that, plus some additional stuff later. I think there is a lot of interest in what's going on with Spider-Man right now, both because of what Slott and company have been doing in the comics, and with the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie coming up.
Issue 700 didn't do 500,000 copies?
No.
Oh.
500,000 is like crazy numbers. The only other stuff I could find even close to that topped out around 330,000.
Walking Dead.
It was actually, I think, issues of Walking Dead, Civil War, and I don't remember what else.
I have one coming. I'm one of those 500,000 coming.
I'm sure a lot of it's just, you know, incentive covers and things like that. If a decent percentage of these get out and people actually read them that are not regular comics reader, I think that's just good for everybody. And I'm not sure when that issue is slated to hit shelves, but man, if I had the cash to do it and was a comic store owner, I would seriously consider having that as a free issue for Free Comic Book Day. I mean, it's around the right time. People would be coming to the shop anyways. This is a great year for Marvel, in terms of Captain America, you know, the Spider-Man movie coming up and stuff like that. There's a chance to get readers onto the comics. I think it's a hard sell and not a surefire thing, but let's see if they can do it. So, anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
Well, I had a nice conversation with Laramie Taylor this week.
Oh, right, right, yes.
And I did a little interview with him, and it we went over a lot of stuff. You know, talked about his book, Voice in the Dark, how to do just kind of go over some of the stuff in Image and how it works. And one of the interesting things, and I just wanted to throw out there, was that he was talking about Comixology. I was talking about his digital sales in Comixology, and he says he's yet to see the first invoice from Comixology for, and he's on issue 5, that they are so much slower than, you know, sales, like print sales reports and those checks and things, that it's even though it's the digital side, and you'd think that would be blazingly fast and a lot quicker to turn around, there's still no numbers. He has no idea what he's doing digitally.
Wow.
5 issues in.
That is disappointing.
Yeah.
Because from a technology point of view, in theory, there is virtually no reason for there to be any significant delay from the time somebody says, I want to buy this, to the money being able to be in his bank account. I mean, we're talking 24 hours-ish, in theory, if it were lightning fast. I'm not saying they should or even do it that fast or anything, but to be 5 issues in and not know how it's selling digitally?
Yeah, amazing. It was a great conversation. Hopefully we'll get it out in the feed down the road and you'll be able to hear it. And let us know, because it was fun to talk to him. He's a really cool guy and doing a great book, you know, Voice in the Dark, that we both really enjoy, John and I.
Yeah,
so,
he's doing some great stuff. I'm planning on putting that up as like a preview spotlight interviews. Probably go up on the Friday slot if I can get that done. I've just been kind of busy and haven't had time to get that queued up.
Well, by the time you hear this, you might hear it. It might already be out. That's awesome.
Well, it'd be the Friday after they hear this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not that fast.
I don't understand how time works.
Now, he's doing some great work. A Voice in the Dark is, I will be honest, I still sometimes worry if he needs psychiatric counseling, because he's telling a very gripping story about some very messed up people.
Well, yeah, you wait till you listen to the impetus, the creative impetus for some of that. So it's pretty cool.
I'm curious about that. Yeah, cool. Good job on the interview. I'm glad you were able to do that and stuff.
Now that pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Aquaman and the Others number 1 from DC, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 200 from Marvel, and Suicide Risk number 12 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.